I was talking with a few other teachers about how it is that we rarely use the word enlightenment in our Dharma talks. I mean, how many here have heard me talk a lot about enlightenment? And I don't mean to say it in a derogatory way. It's like, it's incredible. The Buddha got enlightened. It's the possibility that's right here. But what we were realizing is that there's some connotation or some aura or understanding around enlightenment that often has a sense of some dazzling new thing down the road. Not here and definitely not me. And yet very out of the ordinary. It's like something foreign and historical and distant future, but you get the idea. And for so many of us, what is radical and transforming is when we begin to sense that what we long for, that freedom that we long for, the happiness, the love, the awakeness, is here. It's our very nature. It's what we are. And that our suffering is that we're so in the habit of leaving the here-ness, not trusting or recognizing what we are, that we don't see it. And so all our talking is just the kind of what language works for who, but how is it that we can begin to really shift from that misunderstanding that freedom and enlightenment is out there, to just really beginning to sense that the only place, the place that's always and already where freedom lives, is right here. This heart, this awareness here. There's a poem to share with you. Its title is Lost. Some of you might be familiar with David Wagoner. I like this poem. He writes, "Stand still. Stand still. The trees ahead and the bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and be known. The forest breathes. Listen. It answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying, here. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you." So at times we do quiet down and we do listen. And from that silent listening and from that stillness, sense the love that's here. We might look at another and really see in those eyes that the one looking out is who we are, and feel that communion. Or see beauty and sense that celebration, that mystery that's here. Listen to Mozart and really be transported. There's times we get really still or quiet, or really what it is present. We get here, and everything that we've wanted, that we thought we were going towards, is in that presence. And yet we have a predicament. It's really a universal human predicament of living in a reactive trance a lot of the time. And it's part of evolution. It's part of the process that consciousness, as we take forms arise, consciousness merges with those forms, forgets its belonging to the ocean, gets identified, and then reactive, insecure. And that each of us forget our source and get caught in repeating patterns of thoughts and behaviors, stories that keep saying you're a separate self and probably a not so great separate self that needs to do X, Y, and Z to be a better separate self. You know, we live in that. In other words, we live in a reactive trance for large swaths of our moments with an undercurrent of something's wrong. And most of the time that something's wrong is affixed to the sense of self, that something's wrong with me. And much of our, the shape of our reality is informed by that gnawing sense of not okayness. And it becomes particularly painful. This is dukkha, the dis-ease, when we're facing a relational conflict or a major loss or sickness, death, somebody we love is in pain. So there's times that we know it. We wake up in the middle of the night and there's that rawness, that precarious, angsty feeling that really lets us sense that unease of our separate self-sense. But even when it's not dramatic, if we really pause and pay attention and feel our throat, our chest, and our belly, we'll most often detect an unease, an unsettledness, a kind of a twist or a squeeze that's a kind of anxiety that keeps us leaving, keeps us wanting to leave here. I mean, don't you wonder sometimes why the instructions to meditation are so simple? It starts, just make yourself comfortable. Yeah, right, you know, how many bodies get real comfortable? And then just feel the breath and be with the breath. These are some and then where's our mind go? It's just off immediately chasing down whatever. It's not so easy to be here. How come? There's this angstiness we find. And so we get very hooked on leaving, and we all have our strategies. And what I'd like to explore tonight, I'm calling this talk Getting Unstuck, is looking at the kind of root of that trance, of that angstiness and that leaving process, and really exploring how we can learn to stay, learn to be in that here-ness that's really the gateway to freedom. And I'd like tonight to use a word that I haven't used so much here, that Pema Chodron's kind of popularized, and I think it's a really useful word in exploring this trance, and the word's a Tibetan word, shenpa. And let me just check. How many of you have heard the word shenpa before? Just raise your hand. Shenpa, there's different definitions. It might be thought of broadly as attachment, but it's really more vivid than that. The understanding of Shenpa is like this kind of primal itch or unease that's there. And with that, this urge to move away from the unease. It's this basic kind of sense and feeling tone of something's wrong and got to do something to get away from that something's wrong feeling. And it seems to be part of our DNA code that we have this kind of uneasiness. I mentioned last week, I think, that research has shown that we wake up 10 times a night to just this kind of angsty thing of scanning our environment for danger, and then we fall asleep. But it happens so quickly we don't remember. Unless, of course, we wake up and stay awake, in which case we are, pissed that we're awake. And then we try really hard to fall back asleep, and that trying and the anxiety about how our next day is going to be screwed up keeps us awake and on, you know that one. So Shenpa is this kind of reactivity, and we each have our version of it, that comes from that primal feeling of not okayness. You know it when you know Shenpa. If somebody criticizes you, you know how hard it is just to sit and feel the experience. It's like so quickly we want to explain ourselves, prove ourselves, get back, do something. It's very hard to sit with that. That's the Shenpa. My recent example was I had to get to a dentist appointment a couple of days ago, and there was traffic on the Beltway, and I was late, and I was out of gas, and the light was on. I had a lot of Shenpa, this feeling of like complete unease, and everything in me, my mind started racing, and of course I was constantly trying to figure out, Should I take an exit? Should I get to a gas station? Will they put someone in before me and then I'll have to wait in the waiting? You know, that is the spinning that comes out of Shenpa. The way Pema Chodron describes it is it's like this itch, and then we each have our ways of scratching it. And the scratching of it causes trouble. But let me give you the three basic kinds of Shenpa, and you'll notice this from, you know, greed, hatred, and delusion. The first one is the feeling of something's missing, gotta have something, want something more. And it's what we talk about here frequently as that if only mind. So there's this basic sense that life's not okay as it is. I need something more. I need more recognition, this person to pay attention. I need to acquire something. I like the story of this young man who asks God, how long is 1,000,000 years to God? God replies, well, 1,000,000 years to me is just like a single second in your time. Then the young man asked God what $1,000,000 was to him. God replied, well, $1,000,000 to me is just like a single penny to you. Then the young man got his courage up and asked God, could I have one of your pennies? And God smiled and replied, certainly, just a second. So we all have our fixations, that kind of primal sense of something's not enough. And what it does when we have this Shenpa, this like something's not enough right here, is we're leaning forward. We want the next moment to contain what this moment does not. We're on our way somewhere. It might be enlightenment, but it's still somewhere other than here. Some of you remember that wonderful cartoon with a family in a desert and parents on one camel and the kids on another and then all the belongings on the last one. And the father's turning around responding to something his son's just said. And he says, will you stop asking if we're almost there, for crying out loud? We're nomads, you know? So this on our way somewhere is one of the ways we leave, trying to get more. So what happens when we're really wanting something and we're fantasizing about the future and about getting and planning, and we stop our thoughts and just feel what's there in our body? You know, wanting is uncomfortable. And yet the inquiry that's so helpful sometimes, when we can begin to say, oh, okay, Shenpa, I'm leaning forward, I'm wanting something to be a certain way, I'm wanting to figure something out, or I'm wanting to get this from a person, and we just open to the uncomfortableness. But what if we asked ourselves, what will happen if I keep following this? You know, I keep planning, I keep figuring. Like, what in the next weeks and months if I kept on playing out this way of being hooked? Would I get what I want? See, we keep thinking our strategy is going to work, but it really doesn't deliver. Anyway, that's wanting mind. And then the other version of Shenpa is when there's aversion. It's unpleasantness, and it's like, don't like this. Something feels wrong and we want to push it away. It's like with the criticism. And how do we push it away? We judge, we manipulate, we try to control, we have anger or hatred come up. And it could be directed at the world or blaming those in power or blaming the traffic lights that were unbelievably, the red light just lasted so long when I was late for the dentist. I couldn't believe it. It was ridiculous. Blaming the car. Oscar Wilde on his deathbed was drifting in and out of consciousness. Once, when he opened his eyes, he was heard to murmur, this wallpaper is killing me. One of us has to go. So when Shenpa's there with other people, we try to manipulate what's going on with the other person. If we're angsty, we try to either get something from them or we try to distance ourselves. You know, I love the story of Postmaster General Edward Day. He revealed in his book an ingenious way to stop long-winded telephone callers. He suggests you hang up while you're talking. He said the other party will think you were accidentally cut off because no one would hang up on his own voice, you know. So, So again, but we all have our strategies of how we navigate with each other, and it's like, what if we just stayed with the experience, you know? I think one of our biggest ways of dealing with the shenpa, this aversive feeling, this angsty feeling, is speeding up. And I've mentioned many times here that the word for speed, the Chinese script, is similar to the word for heart killing. That we speed up, we get busy. Thomas Merton calls busyness a pervasive form of contemporary violence. So speed is a key form of scratching. So again, when we find ourselves rushing, for me, when I was on the Beltway and my mind was speeding ahead, imagining what could go wrong and figuring, should I get off and get the gas tank filled and so on. And this was just 2 days ago, and I knew I was going to give this talk, so I kept saying, okay, this is Shen, but this is it. So I would just, what does it mean to really feel it? And it's very uncomfortable. What I found was, if I could stay and just feel the rawness in that presence, space started opening up. And I didn't have to take quite so personally the whole drama I was in. There was just more space. We'll get on to how to stay in a moment, but that's what happens. So there's the shenpa when we're wanting something more, the shenpa when we don't like how it is, and then of course the shenpa where we just ignore or dull out. And we all have our ways of getting away from that rawness. Food is a big one, distracting thoughts, oversleeping. Story, Saul and Mort are walking from religious service. Saul wonders whether it'd be all right to smoke while praying. Mort replies, why don't you ask Rabbi Schwartz? So Saul goes to Rabbi Schwartz and says, Rabbi, may I smoke while I pray? But the rabbi says, no, my son, you may not. That's utter disrespect to our religion. Saul goes back to Sven and tells him what the good rabbi told him. Mort says, I'm not surprised. You asked the wrong question. Let me try. And so Mort goes up to Rabbi Schwartz and says, Rabbi, may I pray while I smoke? To which Rabbi Schwartz eagerly replies, by all means, my son, by all means. So what do we do to do the numbing, you know? And again, what's the question with Shenpa is always, if we keep doing our ways of leaving, whether it's speeding, whether it's obsessive thinking, whether it's overeating or oversleeping, or how much we judge ourselves and others, that's all, there's an itch and that's how we're reacting. Well, what happens if we keep following it, if we keep doing it? These are the ways we leave. Pema Chodron described it as like this hamster wheel that's spinning, and we keep kicking the wheel. We keep replaying our patterns, our mental patterns, our behavioral patterns of leaving. So it keeps spinning, and we keep still experiencing that same something's wrong feeling. And then we kick it again by getting busy more, trying to check something else off the list, believing our blame stories. The Pali word papancha, the proliferation that happens, this is being hooked. If you've noticed that you're at whatever age now and you're doing the same patterns as you were in relationships 30 years ago or 20 years ago, or you're down on yourself in the same ways when certain things happen, are you in the same addictive process, it's because we get stuck. We keep exiting the present moment in the same ways. We get hooked. So the Buddha said we spend a lot of our moments in a reactive trance. We redo our patterns a lot. And it's trying to get away from this primordial uneasiness. And the very act of leaving fuels and reinforces a sense of a not okay self. A wanting self, a fearing self. It deepens the trance. The antidote, this is the part of the talk where you go, okay, so that's the suffering, so how do we get out of this? You know, you must be familiar with that one by now. The antidote to shenpa, what's the medicine? is really two parts. It's seeing it, really seeing it. The reason I brought in this different word tonight, because it's no different of a the Dharma is the same Dharma. It's seeing how we get caught, seeing how we fixate the mind, seeing how we run away. In the very moment of seeing, there's some dissolving of the stickiness. In the moment of seeing, there's a bit of a shift of identity, and we're not so caught or stuck in the self that's running away, the self that's not liking, the self that's bad. And there's a little more of a sense of just being the presence that sees. This is right, the very heart of the Buddha's teaching. Seeing is freeing. Seeing is freeing. If we can see the Shenpa, just like when I was on the Beltway, I could see, okay, this is just angst. You know, it's like there's all these stories spinning around. Do I want to keep kicking the wheel and running the stories? You know, just seeing it. And there was a little more space. But we see it, and then the intention is, can we be here? Can we stay with what's actually here? Not follow the escape route of the spinning thoughts and the behaviors. It's like, can we interrupt our routine and see it and arrive here in this here-ness, which is radical and freeing when we can do it? This is what unhooks us. Our motivation is, for many of us, that we even come here because we've gotten pretty aware of some level of the dukkha, of the pain of the Shenpa, that we don't want to ride out the rest of our days in the same patterns of how we avoid intimacy, in the same patterns of how we judge and put ourselves down, how we put others down. In some way, we don't want to keep being at war with life. Something in us just profoundly wants to live this life fully and love fully. And often practice gets much more serious. We get more committed to staying. Okay, I'm going to learn to be here. When we get that it's fleeting, this life. There's a saying that since death is certain and the time of death is uncertain, what really matters? What really matters? So when we reflect and really ask in a deep and sincere way what matters, rather than living like we have an endless future, which we do, and we keep leaning into it, there's something in us that gets really committed to waking up to what's right here, to not racing across the surface of life to the finish line, you know. What matters? There's a story begins, hurry up, Noah. Noah, let's go. Come on, Noah, I employed my 4-year-old son. If he does not get into his sneakers more quickly, how will I ever manage to do our errands and make it to the park in time for him to play before lunch? Brown eyes, large and serious, Noah looks up at me. But I want to feed my horsey, he insists. Will you help me? We have to go, I want to say. We'll never get to the park in time. But before I say another word, I remember a story of a friend. Susan was pregnant for the first time when she found out she had cancer. She miraculously gave birth to a healthy baby girl, but as the months passed, she and all those dear to her realized she wasn't going to win the battle against cancer. Susan was dying. During the first year of her baby's life, the only year she would live to experience, Susan had a constant refrain, I have no time to rush. No time to rush. Here, Noah, I say now with a smile, showing him the toy carrots. Horses love carrots. Delighted, Noah holds the carrots out to his toy horse. Here, horsey, says. His eyes are even bigger now and his face is radiant. He is so beautiful, I realize. And how long, after all, will he be asking me to help him feed his imaginary horse? So no time to rush. So we're motivated. We forget, but deep down we want to be here. Because deep down we want to realize really what we are and live from the awareness, from the love that is our nature. So we have, our practices are really practices, and this is Pema Chodron's kind of coined this phrase that I think is so wonderful, learning to stay. And learning to stay doesn't mean we're fixating or nailing ourselves into the moment. That's another idea that's controlling. It doesn't mean we're fighting our thoughts. Rather, learning to stay means we just start recognizing how we leave and arrive awake and open in what's right here. Noticing and allowing what's right here. And it turns out to be a letting go. By noticing and arriving, we're interrupting this pattern of leaving. So you don't have to fight it. Just to notice it and arrive here actually starts undoing the conditioning rather than strengthening the conditioning. Every time we speed up and get busy and try to check something else off the list and defend ourselves and prove ourselves and all the Shenpa activities that are when we're hooked, we cut through it by noticing and pausing and just feeling what's here. A lot of the training of staying has to do with recognizing thoughts. Because our trance is that we're so identified in them and lost in them that it takes some practice. We have to get the knack of realizing, oh, I've been lost in thought. Now, thoughts have different degrees of Shenpa. There's some thoughts that are just no big deal. Some thoughts are very useful and they're helping us in ways that are very functional or creative. And there's not the kind of fear-based charge, grasping kind of charge to them. So when we're wanting to quiet and we just notice them, they dissolve pretty quickly when we're just seeing them because there's not a charge there. But for most of us, we go down the track a lot on thoughts that have more charge, that are thoughts that are really driven by our anxiety about what's to come, our fears about what's to come, grasping. And when those kind of Shenpa thoughts arise, where there's that charge, that stickiness, they're a response to an itch, they're just driving, then the practice is to notice and really come into our body and breathe with the place in our body where we feel that unease, that angst, that rawness. The breath helps us to stay present with where the Shenpa lives in our body. It's a tool. For some of you might find that it's not as helpful. For most people, it helps us stay present in a sensory way. It gives us a kind of support in really staying with where the discomfort is and not leaving. It gives a way to kind of ventilate some space for what's there to unfold itself. Learning to stay is the gateway to healing and to spiritual freedom. They're not separate. It lets the tangles untangle and we discover the presence that's bigger than the self we thought we were caught in. I want to give an example of trauma just because I think it's really useful. It's a very extreme way that Shenpa plays out. That when we're traumatized, we keep rerunning the stories and the emotional reactivity. It's like constantly there's something intolerable that we're racing from, and it keeps on. We have to keep re-experiencing the same stories and pain and so on. And to say, learn to be with that and feel that without having some space or some balance can actually be re-traumatizing. It can deepen the trauma. So the way of working with trauma is to really bring a lot of space and warmth and loving kindness to where that pain lives. And as an example, I was teaching a month-long retreat And there was one woman who's found that her meditations were setting off some really panicky feelings, real feelings of kind of a sense of abuse and not being safe. And so she wanted to stay. She wanted to be able to be with where the trauma was in her body, but also knew that it wasn't. If she did it on her own, she would get re-traumatized. So our interviews were me just gradually helping her to learn to stay. And the way it worked was, and she helped to kind of design it in a way, that she wanted to be able to look at, when she started to feel the intensity of it, look at me and know that someone else was there. And she just wanted me to say, be here, it's okay, be here, it's okay. I mean, that was kind of what she asked me to say when she was really caught in it. So she'd sit there and we'd meditate and she'd have images come up and memories and she'd feel that. That kind of rising sense of it's going to be too much, and then she'd open her eyes and we'd just be there, and I'd say, okay, breathe with it, feel it, be here, it's okay. And we went through a number of rounds. It wasn't a one shot, but gradually she started discovering that she could stay, that she had that capacity of space and heart and awareness to stay. And there was a shift. And this is the basic shift, again, I want to emphasize, that by staying, she started waking up out of the story of this wounded, victimized self that couldn't handle what was around the corner. You know, that feeling of something around the corner is going to be too much. She was living with that all the time. And she shifted from that sense of it's going to be too much to this sense of the presence and the care that was big enough for what was there. But it wasn't a one shot. This was a number of times, and then she started finding that she could be with herself. And many of you know I often teach people to put their hand on their own heart and really feel like they're from that space of loving presence, offering safety, warmth, openness to the hurt place. So she learned to do it for herself. She interrupted the Shenpa reaction, the panic and the racing stories and and all her ways she left. And that's what we're really training to do, to recognize that kind of uncomfortable, sticky feeling and pause. And instead of kicking the wheel, being here. We can do it with our inner life and then find out how powerful it is in our relationships. Every one of us has the experience and has had the experience of tripping off patterned reactivities with people in our life. We all know that one. And what breaks those reactivities, that stuckness in relationship, is when we have the capacity to pause and notice it and tolerate the discomfort rather than playing out the reaction. When we can interrupt the Shenpa, space opens up for a whole new kind of inner freedom of how to respond. 2 days ago, I got a letter from someone that comes to retreats with me, and she was telling me about a little miracle. And she said it was managing not to get into a fight with one of her sisters. And I want to read you what she said. She says, every now and then we have some bizarre miscommunication that spirals out of control, and it results in a huge fight and hurt feelings seemingly out of the blue. And then it's months before our relaxed dynamic returns. Anyway, we were just catching up on the phone a few weeks ago, and it was immediately communicated that she was having a grumpy morning. I asked her if now was a good time to talk, and she assured me it was, but the energy of the conversation was off, and it was obvious to me. After a few minutes, I told her that our conversation was feeling awkward for me, and she got upset, ended the call, and hung up on me before I could say goodbye. I had a rush of anger, fear, and more anger. Shenpa. But the miracle was I remembered to stop for a moment and just feel it. the incredible unpleasantness and the rush of energy connected to feeling complete alienation so suddenly from someone I love. And then, the greater gift, I was able to notice and experience the utter urge to try to fix it, either by dissecting what happened and deciding I was right somehow, or by calling her back and demanding some clarity. And having noticed the pain of it, and also the almost instantaneous desire to do something about it, I had a moment of freedom in realizing, this is just how it is sometimes. Period. I didn't do a thing about it except give that energy a lot of space. Long story short, our rift never materialized and our dynamic practically healed itself. I felt compassion instead of alienation. Cool. That was the last thing she wrote to me. Cool. We can't change the past. Absolutely can't change the past. We can beat ourselves up for it and feel bad about ourselves and have a story now of how we do things wrong, but we can't change it. And yet our entire life experience unfolds from how we are here in the present moment. We can shift our entire karma, the deep patterns of reactivity, in the moments that we sense that discomfort and pause and have the courage to feel. And it takes a lot of courage to stay. Now the challenge, because I know for myself, I kind of scan for, okay, Shempa, you know, I'm scanning for where the stuckness is and the reactions are. The biggest Shempa of them all is to start noticing how stuck we are and then judging ourselves for just how, what a, you know, kind of lousy person we are for being so Shempa filled, you know. So we just like, you know, add the Shempa to the Shempa and you get the idea. So it really is the challenge. It's the deepest suffering and pattern we have to put ourselves down. So partly what I'm inviting you to do is recognize the stuck places. And investigate and let yourself open to where it is in the body. But try not to add another judgment of, my God, look how stuck I am. In fact, to celebrate recognizing. It's your wisdom that's recognizing. These habits are impersonal. They're part of our evolutionary conditioning. And we have been given the gift of awareness that wants to realize itself. Awareness wants to realize itself. And so there's part of us that wants to see the trance, wants to see all the ways that we keep fueling that small self story so that we can wake up into the mystery and presence, into that radiance and heart, that's really what we are. The getting unhooked is gradual. It really is. There's an incredible resilience to the patterns. And so it's really a lot of patience, but there's an incredible gift to beginning to cut through the conditioning. And one of the most immediate gifts is a real feeling of aliveness. It's like, it's uncomfortable, it's uneasy, it's unsettling, it's off balance, but there's this mysterious, edgy aliveness that's really powerful. Viju, one of my favorite, it's a final verse of a Mary Oliver poem. She says, "When it's over, I want to say, all my life I was a bride married to amazement. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world." So what we find is in the moments that we pause and open, that we stay here, we're no longer visiting, we're living our moments. this investigation and of Shenpa and learning to stay brings up a tremendous compassion. When we can live in our own shoes, when we can really sense how powerful the forces are of getting stuck. Because if we're honest, every one of us is going to sense how stuck we get. If we're really honest, then we're very compassionate towards others for the way they get stuck. It's like, it's just the way it is. And when we sense the suffering of it and really open to that in ourselves, there's a tremendous tenderness towards what others are running from and are trying to feel. It's not abstract. It's visceral. So this opening, this learning to stay, opens our hearts. In the deepest, and one of the other pieces of this that I just want to reiterate is that Shenpa has a violence to it. The staying stuck. It's like the spirals of violence of war in the world. It's like when we're criticized, we want to lash back. If we can interrupt the patterns in our own body, mind, we set the foundations for peace on this earth. Just the way that story I read you, with just that little incident with her sister, that is the alchemy of moving towards a more peaceful world. That we don't have to be so hooked on being right. We don't have to be so hooked on defending and protecting. We can have the courage to just feel, okay, fear, hurt, anger, and restrain from the acting out that kicks that hamster wheel. We can break the spirals of violence. So this practice of seeing Shenpa, learning to stay, gives us back our aliveness, opens our heart, kind of cuts through the violent reactivity. In the deepest way, it's the gateway to realizing who we are. Shenpa keeps us caught in the story of small self. And when we disrupt the pattern, we come to this openness and presence that really has a kind of simplicity. It's what we are. Henry David Thoreau says that the soul grows by subtraction, not addition. Rather than the proliferation, the reacting, we get simple. We just stay right here. It points to an inner simplicity of the spirit where the secret beauty of life shines when we pause and just arrive here. The poet Ryokan says, without desire, everything is sufficient. With seeking, myriad things are impoverished. Plain vegetables can soothe hunger. A patched robe is enough to cover this bent old body. Alone I hike with a deer. Cheerfully I sing with village children. The stream under the cliff cleanses my ears. The pine on the mountain top fits my heart. So let's just take a few moments to again arrive with our intention and our heart right here. I just consider this as homecoming and a willingness to open to the different layers of life that are right here. Again, letting the senses be wide awake, listening. Listening to and feeling the whole moment. May all beings be filled with loving presence, held in loving presence. May all beings touch a natural and great peace. May there be peace on earth. May there be peace everywhere. May all beings awaken and be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.